Fresh off their first major legislative victory since President Trump took office, Republicans took a bit of a victory lap over the holiday break. Congressman Rodney Davis was back in central Illinois for the holidays, talking up the $1.5 trillion tax package signed by Trump just before Christmas. Polls show the bill remains unpopular, but Davis tells GLT's Ryan Denham that's not what he's hearing in the 13th Congressional District.
Got a lot of thank yous. A lot of folks said, we know this is going to be good, not just for our family budget, but also good for the economy and good for the country. People were still confused. There was a lot of misinformation that somehow this tax bill cut Medicare and Social Security. We had to go through that and explain to a couple of folks that this tax bill doesn't even mention Medicare or Social Security. It has nothing to do with those programs. What it does is it puts more money in the pockets of middle-income and lower-income families right here in central Illinois.
So when you and I spoke on December 20th, I think you were actually like right in the middle of voting. You were wandering around on your cell phone, as I recall. Mm-hmm. You emphasized the benefits that you say the middle class will see from this bill. And yet every study and analysis I've seen in the mainstream media, it says it's the wealthy and corporations that will see the biggest benefits from the bill.
That's not true at all.
Yeah, and when we spoke, you pushed back on that, and you said that's not the case.
Majority of the studies still say that it's not the case.
Why is it one or the other? Isn't it possible that the bill is indeed giving the wealthiest Americans and corporations the biggest tax breaks, but also giving tax cuts to the middle class? I guess can't more than one of those things be true at the same time?
Well, when you look at the percentage of tax breaks going back, money going back into the pockets of families at all income levels, the highest percentage of those dollars are going to go back to middle income and lower income families. The wealthy may have a higher amount come back, but that's not as high of a percentage of that money coming back into their pockets as we focused on the middle income and lower income families.
The Congressional Budget Office has said that this bill will ultimately add more than $1 trillion to the national debt over the next decade. Can you talk about that at all and where your concerns are with that issue?
Obviously, we're always concerned about debt and deficits. We need to make sure that we do everything we can to restrain spending in Washington and really reprioritize how Washington spends money so we can do it more wisely. But doing that because a Congressional Budget Office that is not infallible, and I can give you plenty of examples, and one being the Farm Bill of 2014, where they were $81 billion off of their prediction. They estimated we would save $23 billion in mandatory spending with our changes to the Farm Bill, and we actually ended up saving $104 billion. So that's a big discrepancy. And when the Congressional Budget Office looks at our tax bill, they don't take into consideration the sustained economic growth that many economists say that we can get out of reforming our tax code, not just on the individual side, but also on the corporate side, so we can make sure American companies are more competitive in the global marketplace. We believe, and economists believe, that you can see sustained growth if you listen to Stephen Moore, one of the most noted economists, a University of Illinois graduate. He says sustained growth of 4% is not out of the question. That's over double what we saw over the last 8 years when we had an average of 1.7% economic growth.
The state of Kansas tried something similar to this, not identical, back in 2012. Governor Sam Brownback pushed a dramatic tax cut plan through the legislature there, kind of a shot of adrenaline to the Kansas economy, as he put it. The opposite ended up happening. So last year, the Republican-controlled state legislature voted to roll back those tax cuts, and Kansas is still dealing with the aftermath of that experiment. So the experience in Kansas suggests that the tax cuts do not necessarily pay for themselves over the long run. So why is this different in this case?
Well, there's a big difference between state tax code and the federal tax code. And all you have to do is look at your tax bill and you can see that. That's why we feel we put together a very well-balanced approach that's going to give us the economic growth to be able to reduce the debt to GDP ratio and allow for that $1.5 trillion projection to be overcome by more money coming into the federal coffers because of increased economic activity. We're going to see a shot in the arm with repatriation, money that's been held overseas by American companies, trillions of dollars, that are now going to be incentivized for those companies to bring that back into our economy. And that's going to help us sustain this economic growth. And we're encouraging companies to invest here in America. And you're seeing them invest in their employees right now. AT&T, 10,000 Illinois workers are getting a $1,000 bonus that they didn't expect because AT&T and many other companies like Boeing and others here in this state want to reinvest in their employees and in growing their companies right here in Illinois and in this nation. So you look at some provisions that Sam Brown back in the Kansas Republicans put forth a few years ago. This is why we have some different provisions in how to file as a pass-through company, for example. A pass-through company is, these are our local small businesses that make up Uptown Normal. They're not paying taxes under the corporate rate. They're not considered a, they're not paying on that corporate side. They're actually paying on the individual rates. And if they're an LLC or if they're a subchapter S, whatever they use to set their company up, they were going to be paying upwards of 40% because that was the highest level of the individual rate that we had. And that was not fair. When you had corporations paying at 35%, but small businesses paying part of their income at 40%, to me, that's wrong. We cap that at 25%, but you also have to prove that you're a business. Because what happened in Kansas is you saw people like Bill Self, the basketball coach at University of Kansas. He makes a lot of money. He decided to turn himself into an LLC so he'd owe less taxes. We tried to make sure that we stopped that from happening. And if you see abuses like that, we'll make changes. But that's why I believe we put a very well-balanced bill together. Trust me, not everyone is happy with this bill because they're looking at certain deductions that they're not going to get. But what they're also not looking at is the reduction in overall rates, the simplification of our code, the global competitiveness of our code, making sure that we invest in Main Street businesses and middle income and lower income families is exactly what I promised we would do. And that's exactly what I believe the bill does.
Well, can you talk a little bit about your plan here on the expiration of the individual tax cuts? I know you've been in some other media recently talking about that. Republicans decided to sunset nearly all of the individual tax cuts in part to help pay for the making those corporate tax cuts permanent. In the past, when you and I have talked, you talked about Senate Democrats being partially to blame for those expirations dates on those individual tax cuts. But ultimately, you know, Republicans do control the agenda in Washington. And couldn't you have just reworked the package in a different way to make those individual cuts permanent?
I certainly wish we could have. And frankly, that's what we did in the House. We made them permanent in the House, right? But you have to get 60 votes in the Senate to work under what they call regular order rather than the reconciliation process that the lack of any Democrat support forced us to do. 8 Democrats could have joined together with every Republican in the Senate to make these individual rates permanent, but they chose not to. They chose not to play a role, even though the Democrats had members of the committees of jurisdiction when these bills were written. They appointed members to the conference committee, the final committee that put this bill together and worked out the House and Senate differences. Those Democrats on that conference committee could have easily said, "We will vote for an amendment that will make these individual rates permanent and get to that 60-vote threshold to make it not have to focus on reconciliation." And we could have had it done, but they didn't do it because they wanted a talking point. And that's unfortunate, but that's the process. And yes, Republicans control the House, and we do everything on a majority basis. Great. If the Senate would do things on a majority basis, then I would blame the Republicans for not putting forth a permanent fix to the individual rates. But it takes both parties to tango in the Senate. And unfortunately, the Democrats didn't even want to get on the dance floor. And we will have a bill. We will have a bill when we get back to Washington. I will introduce in the House that will make these individual rates permanent. And I hope that our senators, Senator Durbin, Senator Duckworth, will hopefully join Bernie Sanders, who has been supportive of making the individual rates permanent. When I get my bill over to the Senate, I hope those three lead the charge to make these permanent, because that's exactly what Bernie says he wants. Now, we'll see if the future holds whether or not the Democrats will want to do that.
So this tax bill is expansive. It has impacts potentially not just next year, year after that, I mean, decade or even more beyond that. You, other House members, you're all up for re-election in 2018. You're going to be judged partially on this bill, even though it is only in effect for, 11 months at that point. How do voters know if the bill is working 11 months from now?
Well, it's a great question. And frankly, I'm glad. I can't wait to be held accountable for this tax cut for middle class and lower income families in my district. You ask how they're going to know. Well, come February, when the IRS sends instructions to every payroll company and every employer to withhold less money for every employee they have because that employee is going to owe less money to Uncle Sam, every person who gets a paycheck in America is going to be able to see an increase in their paycheck. They're going to see it in February, right now. And that is something that I think is going to have a tremendous impact on families that I serve. You know, with the average family, we estimate at least $1,200 that they'll put back into their pockets. $1,200 is a big deal to many families I serve that are living paycheck to paycheck, trying to put their kids into college, pay for their sports that their kids are playing in junior high and high school. These are the types of issues that I went to Washington to address, and I will never be apologetic for putting more of their money back in their pockets and their family budget instead of sending it to Washington, D.C. to get lost in the abyss of terrible bureaucracy.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here with Congressman Rodney Davis, a Republican from Taylorville, who represents the 13th Congressional District, which includes parts of Bloomington Normal. Let's pivot to the rest of the Republican agenda in Congress for 2018. You're headed back to Washington soon. You need to pass a budget. I believe the stopgap funding measure runs out here in a few weeks. How do you want to see that play out so that we avoid a shutdown, automatic cuts, sequestration, all that?
Well, this is what's frustrating as a member of the House. You know, we passed our appropriations bills, every single one of them. First time it's been done since the 2000s, mid-2000s. These are spending bills that are put together on a bipartisan basis through our Appropriations Committee, an open rule on the floor where anybody can offer amendments. If they're debated bipartisan in a bipartisan way, we put all of them together and pass them to the Senate. I would certainly hope that our senators here in Illinois and senators on both sides of the aisle can take those appropriations bills up. And if they do, we don't have to worry about any more deadlines for funding bills. I'm frankly sick and tired of spending deadlines. This is the way we actually spend money in Washington, the way our forefathers imagined we should. This is how Congress actually has the power of the purse, by doing our appropriations process on an annual basis. We did it in the House, and I'm just as frustrated with Republicans in the Senate as I am Democrats when it comes to not taking up bills like this. And if Mitch McConnell has to, he ought to darn well do it on a 51-vote margin, rather than waiting for this 60-vote threshold that on issues even as important as tax cuts for middle-income and lower-income families, the Democrats in the Senate have clearly shown they want to play politics more than they do putting good policies in place. That's how we avoid any future spending issues over this next fiscal year. And really, it's crucial if we want to get out of this shutdown talk every year.
2018 being an election year, what are some things you actually want to get done and think can be done given that election environment?
First off, I want to make these tax cuts permanent for the individual side. I also want to see us get a bipartisan infrastructure bill in place. I've been campaigning on investing more in infrastructure, even when it wasn't cool to do, when we didn't have a president, even a Republican president, who's been pushing this issue too. Infrastructure is crucial. It should be the most bipartisan issue that we face when it comes to major administration priorities this upcoming year. And time will tell if we're going to have that bipartisanship that I think has existed when it comes to infrastructure, and certainly should when we look into fulfilling the administration's promise of having a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure.
That's Congressman Rodney Davis, a Republican from Taylorville who represents the 13th Congressional District, which includes parts of Bloomington Normal. I'm Ryan Denham.
Tomorrow on GLT's Sound Ideas, we'll hear more from Congressman Davis, specifically what he thinks about President Trump's first year in office.